wanted to see whether we can count the people or not, and he would told me that the year before, the organizers of Cinco de Mayo said that there were 100,000 people that that came, and the police chief said we estimated that were at least 400,000. And the police, local police, actually charges the people of that group per head. So they said we were paid for 1/4 of what we did, because for every grouping of people, we have to have police cars and the ambulances and all of this for public protection. So the numbers don't have to be necessarily only for political pressure, but also for safety of the citizens.
Bearing that in mind, let me go back to David Brunel, who's with the CHP Office of Capital Protection. This is the part that I'm mystified by. We're going to get to methodology in just a moment, but your office, in essence, doesn't have to worry about that because you're counting on the organizers to do the counting. I guess what mystifies me is it's in your hands to plan for safety and to plan for crowd control, et cetera. And it seems like that's a huge missing element logistically, is how many people did we get and how well did this number of officers work with this many people? How can you manage to plan and then plan again without retrospective counts?
Well, that's very true, and that's the reason why we have a permit officer. We have one officer who's responsible for a very particular interview process. We have a number of questions that we ask, and there's reasons for that. It's, as you mentioned previously, for the group safety. If we've got maybe an older group, and they're going to have a demonstration with several thousand people in summertime, you know how hot it gets in Sacramento. Well, what we do is we make arrangements with the local police department, in this case it would be Sacramento Police Department, to handle buses that come in and, you know, on the city streets. The Sacramento Police Department, we have to coordinate with another agency, as well as if there's going to be several people and they're going to be here for the whole day, they may be coming from great distances. And so they may have lunches, they may have food and drink, they have to make arrangements for maybe a porta potties on the grounds, because the Capitol is a functioning business climate, and there's just so many things. We also have paramedics that are park and ambulance.
This is all stuff you're able to coordinate just on, in essence, trusting the organizers that their numbers will be close to accurate.
Well, yes, we are. We're trusting, but we're also asking a lot of very specific information from them, and we also have a past history, because usually event coordinators, we get to be somewhat familiar with them because they do it on an annual basis.
Mm.
So if we have one permit officer who may be familiar with that person, and if they have a habit of not being completely truthful, we may deny them a permit.
We're going to get down to nuts and bolts of logistics right now. And in fact, if some of you would like to start getting your calls lined up on the other side of that, we'll start taking your calls. So our numbers are 415-863-2476. If you'd like to contribute your questions or comments about crowd estimates, 415-863-2476. If you're listening at kqed.org or you're listening anywhere outside the 415 area code, your toll-free number is 866-SF-FORUM, 866-733-6786. Gregory, sir, this week the police department said, you know, we were dealing with guesstimates and we understand these may not have been entirely accurate in the case of the San Francisco Peace March, so we're going to regroup. Talk to me about what logistics may need to change in the way you've gathered your numbers in the past.
Well, I don't think that the way that field operations has gathered their numbers in the past need to be corrected. What happens is we need to have one speaker or one voice that speaks for the crowd estimate. I was asked by Channel 5, and I was standing at Civic Center when they asked me, and I told them what I just told you. Civic Center holds 40 to 43,000, and I think that the demonstration was as large as any demonstration I've seen in 20-some-odd years, and I would estimate that that would be at least 75,000. So if you basically did the math, I was saying that the crowd was somewhere in the ballpark of 125 or 35,000 in the aggregate. Mm-hmm. Also, I agree with the other members of the forum that you have to understand there's a real ebb and flow to these demonstrations. And then there's also an intersection as the demonstration moves into Civic Center. Civic Center already had a lot of people present that were elderly and families and didn't want to make or couldn't make the march up Market Street. But Market Street was very, very crowded. And as they moved into Civic Center, they displaced some people that were already there, and then some people decided, hey, I'm just going to make the march, and then I'm going to head home. I mean, the major question we answered from the southern end of the square that day was, how do you get to BART? So a lot of people literally made it to the square, and then they believe that they'd made their statement as to this very, very important issue. But I don't think that there's this disparity that everybody seems to think there was. I think the organizers believe that, or stated that they thought there were 150,000 people, and I think that when the police department, when the event commander, who was me, says that there was probably 125 to 130,000, I think we speak to the doctor's margin for error, that I think if I'm off by 10%, we're all really in the same ballpark.
Dr. Elbaz, has this actually engendered any interest in putting together a more accurate counting system across the board, national, federal, state?
Not really. It's only that an attempt was made by the National Park Service by asking me to write a white paper so they could take it to Congress and say, okay, if you really want us to do it right, this is the way to do it. By acquiring, meaning buying a fixed-wing aircraft, buying the proper digital cameras and another high-resolution camera for the archives, and then equipment for the computers to actually place a grid automatically on the place that they see crowds in it, and then come up with a very good number that will be within a few percent. But there was certainly a dollar figure attached to that. It was very close to 20 million when you add the cameras and the aircraft and the training and the people that would do it, the number of people that would have to be assigned to it. But this would be building up the infrastructure to be able to do it for everybody, anywhere, anytime. So Congress looked at that, and they were not about to add that much money to the National Park Service, so they elected just to take the easy road by removing the counting of the crowds from the job description of the National Park Service.
And I understand that the gentleman whose primary job of the National Park Service it was to release those numbers was just hugely relieved.
Yes, because they know that there is always a controversy, and there is no way for him to prove his point, and there is no way for the organizers to prove their point, so there was no methodology that we are very certain about within a few percentage points of the numbers of people that came at a given time in a given place.
Lucy Barber?
Though, of course, they've stopped releasing those numbers to the media. They haven't stopped counting because, as Angie's been emphasizing, there's a value to counting so that you can plan later and understand better how to deal with the crowds. At least this is my understanding. The key switch is the decision to back away from making any releases to the media about the crowd. Because it's not just whether or not it costs money or whether it's accurate, it's also whether it fits people's political agenda. And I think what people decided in the wake of the Million Man March is it's just you can't win. Some people in Congress are going to want those numbers to be big. Other groups are going to want those numbers to be small. And it's easier to, as you say, take the easy way out and not release them to the media. But for security purposes, they're still counting. And indeed, this last weekend, now they had cameras up in order to record the crowd as they were there. I mean, those cameras are going to be permanent security measures, but they were also being used at that point to watch behavior and figure out how to better monitor demonstrations.
And this is essentially a debate without end. I mean, within very recent history, they were still recounting the numbers of people who gathered to hear the I Have a Dream speech.
Oh yeah. I mean, the numbers are regularly exaggerated in my mind. But on the other hand, the numbers were huge for the time. Mm-hmm. So you routinely see estimates that are different than even the organizers made at the time. So
we're talking about the science and the politics of estimating crowds. I want to thank David Brunell for being with us in this first half hour, public affairs officer with the Office of Capital Protection, California Highway Patrol. Thank you, David Brunell. Appreciate that.
Thanks for inviting me.
We also have with us for the remainder of the hour, Lucy Barber here in the studio, author of Marching on Washington, The Forging of an American Political Tradition, Dr. Farouk Elbaz, who's the director of the Center for Remote Sensing at Boston University, and staying with us as well is Gregory Sir, deputy chief of the San Francisco Police Department. We have your calls on the line, and we'll be getting to those as soon as we take a little break here on Friday Forum. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Angie Coiro.
I only saw
a small blip on the news last night. It was almost a traffic report that there might be some traffic on Market Street. And I thought, well, it's more than a little traffic block. It's a huge political protest.
Lucy Barber, it's about, in a sense, it's about creating that traffic block so that you get on the news.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things here, that numbers are important, but it's also just about creating an event that captures people's imagination so that they show up, and then that also captures the people's imagination so that there's something to cover, which is why, in addition to numbers, you also want to have interesting signs. Be nice if we had some more compelling speakers at most of these rallies, but people do as well as they can, given the tendency to limit them to 2 minutes instead of the 10 minutes that people had in 1963. So it's a trick to figure out how to get a dramatic, interesting demonstration and then to get the media coverage that you want afterwards.
Let's take some of your calls. We're going to start with John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm calling about Saturday's march, and as one who attends all the large events in San Francisco, when there were 300,000 people estimated to be at Halloween in the Castro, and as more than that at Gay Pride Day, the crowds are obviously stationary. However, at this one, as I walked down Market Street, there were vast numbers of people walking out of the area up Market Street, just crowds and tons of people on the sidewalks, and that continued the whole day. As people flowed onto Civic Center Plaza up Market Street, they filled Civic Center and then flowed away in equal amounts in all directions. One had only to go down the escalator to BART, as I did at one point, thinking so cleverly in my mind that I would just hop on BART and go to Montgomery Street. Well, when I went down from the Civic Center Plaza, I got caught with thousands of people in that one block-long concourse and got stuck. It was just shoulder to shoulder all the way from the turnstile to the base of the escalator. So I just turned around and went right back up. And there was no way to count people underground, no way to count people flocking to 16th and Mission Street. The people in cars, there were people carrying signs who were stuck in traffic, unlike most events where people come and they stay there. So it seems to me that there were more than what the organizers estimated, at least 150,000. Having gone up to the library and looked down at the crowd and down Market Street and zipped all over as much as possible to see the furthest reaches of the crowd, there were tons of people, unlike any crowd I've ever seen in San Francisco in the 15 years I've lived here.
John, thanks for sharing your impressions on that. And that prompts me to ask Dr. Farouk Elbaz, understandably, there are people who are dropping out of the counting business, at least publicly, as we've already covered, the National Park Service is not going to go public with its numbers anymore. But for those agencies that are going to stay in the business of counting crowds, will they pay heed to, for example, what John saw? You have to count the underground. You have to count the side streets. You have to get transit numbers and throw them all into the pot and cook them up.
Yeah, there are certainly ways to do all of that together. But in some ways, the political impact means that one has to figure out a specific time where we can call it the peak time of the event, whatever that event might be, whether it's a celebration or a political strategy. And it is possible to count people at a given time, at a given space, very accurately, but you cannot possibly say the total number of people that came to this place during this day was XX. Mm-hmm. Because you need, whatever you count, you must be able to make that into a unit of time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And like this gentleman that said there were tons of people. Yeah, what is tons of people at a given time? And they're moving from this place to that place. Yeah, are they the same people or are different people? So you really cannot perceive of the total number unless you want to take a specific time and a specific place.
Let's talk to Michael, who's calling from... Oh, let me get a comment first from Lucy Barber.
One thing I think maybe make it a different challenge in San Francisco than from Washington, D.C. is that in Washington, you can do a little bit more with the crunching of the numbers on transit and also on bus transportation. Here it felt like, from my friends and everyone that came down, that the people were coming in so many different forms of transportation to get to the Bay Area. You know, they're staying in friends, they're getting on the BART, some are taking the organized buses, others are living in the city and coming for it, so it would be hard to get that kind of count. In Washington, it does tend to be more of this outsider march in, and so in some cases, they've done really good numbers by counting the number of people that come on buses. They did this in 1963, for example, the number of trains, and then doing some, you know, extrapolations from the number of cars because they parked them in a specific area. And so that can help, because they're sort of, the new method in Washington is to have everybody park in the suburban metro parking lots, and including the buses, and then they go in, and then they can do counts on what's the difference between the metro ridership on that day than what you would have on a normal Saturday or on a normal Sunday. And that can it can give you another style of what the caller was interested in terms of getting the people moving in and out of the city. It feels to me like it would be harder to do that in San Francisco.
Let's take a call from Michael in San Francisco. Hi, Michael. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I'd like to make a comment and then a question. The comment has to do with the nature of these demonstrations as being somewhat anti-democratic, in that they have been traditionally used. No wonder they started in the United States in the 30s. It was the period of the rise of fascism and communism in the world, and both these kind of fringe political parties oftentimes saw mass demonstrations as a way of undermining the governments that they were opposed to. But my question goes to more: who pays for the liability, both for the damage that is often caused in these mass demonstrations, or just for the cost of policing them? Everyone else in society who wants to use public space is expected to pay for the additional cost to the public for use of those spaces. Do we have a mechanism whereby, at a mass demonstrations, if people begin to destroy private property, the people who organize the demonstrations have a bond or an insurance policy to cover all these damages?
Let's take that in two parts. We're going to take the last part first and go to Gregory Sir on that.
Well, obviously, the mechanism by which we recover costs of damage, that's criminal conduct. There were arrests made on Saturday, and they are totaling up the bills for the damage to
that
the...
That never works.
Well, I'm just answering the question.
Right.
Never works.
As far as the organizers, San Francisco is self-indemnified. So we pretty much pay our own bills, and as far as the police resources and other city agency resources dedicated to any spontaneous event, especially with regard to First Amendment type demonstrations, the city has enough resources out there to keep the public safe and to clean it up afterwards, and it just goes in general policing. And because of the current economic situation, really across the whole country, we try to do it as much as we can with on-duty officers to keep the overtime costs down.
Lucy Barber-Michael's portrayal of history there, does that resonate with you?
I think there's...